B-Pod Studios.
Stay with us and we're going to show you how to take dead aim.
Take dead aim.
The importance of taking dead aim.
Welcome to Taking Dead Aim, a show dedicated to the game of golf and the people who play it in the Carolinas and around the world. Taking Dead Aim is a presentation of RBC Wealth Management and Academy Sports and Outdoors. And now, here's your host, a man who once described Caddyshack as an awesome documentary, Charlie Nance.
Hey, welcome back. Once again, we are Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at CLT underscore golf guy. Well, we're 1 week away from High Holy Days. Masters Week is my favorite of the golf year. It's my favorite tournament on my favorite venue in the world. I am forever in love with the history and the drama that is Augusta National Golf Club and the Masters. And this week, we'll get you ready for next week with a conversation I recently had with country music superstar Chris Lane, who just played the National. Also, we'll check in with John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, to talk about the historic inaugural Augusta National Women's Amateur Championship that's taking place this weekend on the hallowed grounds. But we begin today with SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio's Bill Rozinski to talk about last week and what he observed covering the WGC Dell Technologies Match Play Championship in Austin. Bill, before we get to the match play, just a personal question here. You are one of the most versatile and best sports broadcasters in the business right now. I hear you doing football, and I get the feeling you love to do football. I hear you doing college basketball, and you really, really enjoy college basketball, or really like it, rather. I think when I hear you do golf, there's a comfort level. It's as if you're really enjoying broadcasting golf. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you know, I think it does. You know, I've done football for so long that I have a very good comfort level with it. When I do college basketball, I'm kind of limited to 7 or 8 regular season games and the ACC tournament. So there's that, you know, trying to get into the flow. And then by the time I'm into the flow, you know, the season's over with. Golf is unique in that it's you know, it's laid back, it's relaxed.
And maybe that's the word I was looking for, because you just seem so comfortable in that setting, and maybe it's because of the intimacy, because you're right there on top of the action, even more than at a basketball game, really.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to be inside the ropes like that is very unique, and you're not that way with other sports, and you're not in the huddle, you're not on the court. But you can stand within 10 or 15 feet of a golfer hitting a shot. So it's it is unique in that way. And it's, you know, it's just different. And I like to tell people, you know, I, you know, started doing high school back in the 70s, and I did high school basketball, and I did baseball and Division III stuff. You don't do minor league golf. there's no broadcasting in minor league in golf, and you just kind of get thrown out there. And now it's been 10 years. It's amazing. I started this in 09 with SiriusXM, and then the PGA Tour took over running that, you know, the regular tour stops. And now I get, and then ESPN had, we had the British and U.S. Opens for five years. And now, you know, Sirius has the PGA and the U.S. Open. So it's been a great ride.
Was this the first time that you'd done this event in Austin, the match play?
No, we were there last year. And got to, you know, when I first saw the course, I wasn't in love with it. I thought it was kind of quirky, but now that I've gone around it again, I've noticed how, I mean, it's just really good for match play. I can't imagine what those guys would shoot if it was a stroke play event. I mean, you'd really have to grow the rough up there and speed the greens up. Otherwise, you know, these guys are going to be, I think 25, 30 under par would get you in a top 10.
Oh yeah!
If they played stroke play, but for match play, it's great because you can have some disastrous holes, and like 12 and 13 are perfect examples. 12 is par 5, very reachable in 2, but you got water on the left, and they put the pins in spots where it makes it if you want to go on a flag and you're down 2 or something in a match, it could cost you. Then 13 is that drivable par 4 over the water, and so, you know, it lends itself to some really interesting match play.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. When people watch that tournament, you would never see professional golfers hit driver off the tee as many times as they hit driver off the tee on that golf course. And it's because it's match play. They're trying to attack because they don't care if they get a bogey or a 12. It's just going to be the loss of a hole. And it's a gamble, you know, pretty much every time out to see how far can I hit it, how close can I get it, you know, to try to get an advantage. And especially the back nine at Austin Country Club really lends itself to that.
Yeah, you know, 10's a short par 4, but it's one where they're probably hitting some type of iron off the tee, leaving themselves a wedge. 11's a par 3, and then I mentioned 12 and 13. 14's probably one of the toughest holes out there because you got the lake out on the left, and the wind was howling all week long. Even when it was warm, it was really windy, so that played havoc into your shot. 15's a tough hole. And then you got 16, 17, 18, and 18, 17's a really short par 3, which lended itself to guys going at flags. And then 18, drivable par 4, the first couple of days. And then that wind changed, and guys were, lucky to get it down into the valley short of the green. So, yeah, you're right. It's a course that lends itself to a lot of great match play matches, and I think they just extended it for 3 years. And we'll see where it goes after that.
Bill Rozinski with PGA Tour Radio and Sirius XM, our guest taking Dead Aim. He was on the call at the Dell Technologies Match Play Championship, the WGC event, last weekend. Do you get the vibe that, and they've tweaked this format a lot, do you get the vibe that the players enjoy the event now? Do they like the pod system for 3 days, or do you get the vibe that, we'd still like to make a couple of changes before we'd really be happy?
I think they're very happy with it. The only suggestion I have heard that would be different than what they're doing now is to have stroke play the first 3 days to get you into match play. They have the grouping system now, the pods, whatever you want to call it. You got to win your group. And I think, it's match play. So let's have match play. I think the players like the fact that they can show up, lose on the first day, and still like Kevin Kisner. And still have a chance to win the golf tournament, as opposed to what it was like at Dove Mountain all those years in Tucson, where it was one and done. Now that every match was crucial then, starting on that Wednesday when they were doing it that way. But you don't want to see a Tiger or Rory or all these big names that you have there bowing out after the first day. So now you got a chance to see them play for 3 days. And then, obviously, you get into the quarters and the semis and all that, and you have it's strictly match play after that. So I think the format's good. And the other thing they do is, even though the money, if you finish in a certain spot, the money's the same, but the FedEx Cup points are different. If you had 1.5 points instead of 1, you're getting more FedEx Cup points. And, at the end of the year, that might be crucial for somebody.
Thank you for bringing up Kevin Kisner, who won the event and arguably one of the top five most popular guys on tour with just about everybody. But the rap on Kis to this point is, although he's won several PGA events, is that he's gotten himself in contention at some big tournaments. He got in that playoff with Ricky at the TPC. He was in the final group at the PGA Championship that was held here at Quail Hollow, and he just couldn't seem to get over the hump in a really big event. This, I thought, was really huge for him, especially coming off a last year where he got boat raced by Bubba Watson in the final. For him to come back and do this was really impressive stuff, and who knows what this could lead to.
Yeah, and I think we found out how, and we've seen over the last couple of years now, how good he is in match play. You mentioned the match with Bubba, and he said that, I think this was on Saturday, that he had learned a year ago that going into the semis, he had to do something a little different than he did a year ago when he got blown out by Bubba in the championship match. And I think he did. He hit some balls. He got, it was cold out. So I think he took a shower, changed clothes, got warm, went out, hit some balls. I don't know what he did the year before. Maybe he just grabbed a bite to eat, went back out and played again. But you could see the difference in him. And I think he was, and plus he was jacked up. I mean, he knew. I mean, here's a guy, a year ago I had his match when he routed Poulter, and I'm going, wow, this guy's really playing well because he took down the king of match play. And then he was so disappointed to lose the match to Bubba and the way he played. And he came in with an attitude, even though he lost his first match. He was ready for the weekend, and kudos to him. And even though, you know, we didn't have Tiger or Rory of those guys playing on in the semis of the championship game, I thought it was a great event.
Bill, you bring up Tiger and Rory. You were out there on Saturday morning, and it was early on Saturday morning for the whole world. But was there a buzz and electricity to those two guys going head-to-head?
Oh, yeah, certainly. And we were talking about it. The three of us who were calling shots going out to the golf course that morning. We go, what do you think, Tiger, Rory? And I said, well, Rory's got to have to putt. I said, there's no question. Tee to green, he can probably outplay Tiger distance-wise and with some of the shot-making. He's got to make putts. And that's exactly what happened in that match. Tiger was not – I think maybe Tiger played his best match before he got to Rory. I forgot who he beat, but he said he had played, like, really well. And he knew McIlroy had never been behind in a match during the week. And when they played, it was just – you know, Rory just kept missing putts. Now, he gave him a run. You know, he came back, I think it was three down, ended up one down or going to 16, and he hits his 350-yard tee shot, and then basically hits, you know, a couple of horrible wedge shots and ends up giving him a hole. He made a seven. Tiger was not in the fairway on his tee shot, and he had a birdie putt, but that's pretty much was the end there. But I thought Tiger didn't have his A game last week. One match he might have had it. The rest of them he kind of squeaked by with guys who weren't playing well. And then of all people, you know, Lucas Biergaard beats him, and a lot of people disappointed after that match.
Yeah, that was a strange ending to that match. It seemed almost surreal. Who is this guy with so many vowels in his name, and what is he doing with the audacity to think he can beat Tiger Woods, and then he snuck up and just bit him on the backside? PGA Tour Radio and SiriusXM's Bill Rosinski is our guest taking Dead Aim. Speaking of Tiger, you saw him at the end of last summer when for some brief moments, some glimpses, my God, we were looking at Tiger Woods again. You saw him this last week. We're a week away from the Masters. What is your assessment of Tiger Woods in terms of, do you think he legitimately has a shot at Augusta?
Yeah, and I say that because he had a legitimate chance to win the PGA Championship last year in St. Louis. The only guy who played better than he did that weekend was Koepka. So he was in a, you know, and I know he won last year, but that was the tour championship with, he beat 29 other guys that last weekend. Full field event. He had a chance to win the PGA championship, and he's going to a course where he is obviously in a position where he can hit some wayward tee shots, and I mean Augusta, and not get in a lot of trouble. Excuse me. So I think he's in position. I think it's his putting hasn't been great, Charlie. It wasn't superb, and you can ask, you know, the match against Biergaard. You know, at 18, he's got a 4.5-footer to send that match into an extra hole, and he missed it. So I think that'll be the key for Tiger going into the Masters is can he make putts? And even he will tell you, you know, put yourself in a position at Augusta where you have you can be aggressive on putts, and that's keeping it below holes. You keep it above the hole there, forget about it. You're playing defense.
Bill, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about the match between Kuchar and Sergio. What the hell went on out there?
Well, you know, it's funny because I had done a couple of matches. I had closed out some matches. And then my producer says, Bill, pick up Kuchar and Sergio at 10. So I go out to 10. I'm waiting for him to come down the fairway. And at this point, I had heard something had gone on at 7. And obviously, we all know now that Sergio missed a 7-footer that would have won the hole. He tried to rake in a 4-inch putt and missed. Kuchar had not given him the hole yet, and as a result, Sergio loses the hole.
Now, my question was this, and this is what was vague. Did Kuchar call in the rules official, or did the rules official step in independently?
From what I've read, I believe Kuchar went to the rules official.
Because that changes it for me right there. If the rules official had stepped in independently, then it's all on Sergio. Kuchar could have avoided this whole thing by just saying, yeah, I said it was good. And if he called in a rules official on that, that just seems like dirty pool to me.
Yeah, I get it. I understand. And that from what I've been reading since, that was the case. that he brought the rules official and said, hey, look, I didn't give him the putt. He raked it in. I'll give it to him. And the official goes, well, no. I mean, so the official comes and says you can't do that. And then, of course, then Sergio, and then Mikuchi's going, geez, I hate to win a hole that way. And then Sergio said, well, then give me the next hole. So, and this is funny because, they put that video out a couple of days ago with the two of them in a car.
Oh, yeah.
At Austin Country Club. And they're, I was thinking this one, and he was saying something like, Sergio never asked me to give him a hole. Well, that's not what I heard, because to finish the story, I'm standing next to 10 Green, and one of the NBC guys following the match, not the broadcasters, but if fans don't know, there's spotters out there.
Yeah.
There's people that drive carts. There's people with cameras and boom mics and all this stuff that you get to know when you're out on tour. And this guy walks up next to me, and he says, have you been with this match the whole time? I said, no, I just got here. And he said, wow, he said, Sergio. He says, they're having an animated conversation down the fairway at 10, and it was Sergio trying to convince Kuchar to give him a hole. So this started at 8, and here we are at 10, and this conversation's still going on. And then, Kuchar ends up winning the match. He was one up going to 18, and then ends up winning a two up. So, I mean, if that match is even going to 17, that's a different story. But, I think Matt's made some initial decisions this year that have really come back to haunt him.
Yeah, truly. Get you out of here on this. Bill Rosinski is with PGA Tour Radio and Sirius XM, our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, you've gotten the opportunity to spend some time on the range, on the course with guys. And, look, match play, there's some vagaries. You can have one or two bad shots, and it can cost you a match. Whose game that your eyeballs tell you, wow, if I'm going to throw down some quid, these are the three or four guys that I would take going into Augusta?
Well, I still think you have to go back to Rory, and as Rory was in the last group with Patrick Reed a year ago, and then he had a chance. I think it was a two for a little. He could have tied him, and he missed this easy putt. It's going to come down to Rory's flat stick again. So besides Rory, I think DJ, if he can walk downstairs and not get hurt, he's going to be a factor. I wouldn't count out Justin Rose. I don't think Justin Rose's game is quite what it was a couple of months ago when he won it in San Diego.
I agree.
You throw out names like Ricky Koepka. Koepka hasn't been that sharp lately. God, I'd love to see Gary Woodland play well.
Oh, I would too.
That guy's got such game, but he just can't finish. Paul Casey's playing good golf. I would throw those names out there. Tiger's going to be a big favorite, I think, with the fans. And again, it's going to come down to how he putts. It's funny how, we talk about the yardage and how these guys are bombing the ball, but in the end, it comes down to can you chip or putt to win a major championship. So I would throw those names out there. And I'm probably skipping, six or seven other guys. I've told you this before, Charlie. I think we're in a second golden age of golf. I don't know how long we have here, but it's funny. We used to have a golf league 30 years ago, before anybody was playing fantasy golf, when I was working at the old Mutual Radio Network. We had a golf league, and somebody found our rosters from 1989.
Okay.
And I'm looking at this list of names, and I'm going, there was Seve, and there was, Watson. Jack was there, still in it. But I'm looking at all these names, and I'm going, well, those group of players weren't, they didn't get you excited. These guys now, they're all good. I think we're in another golden age of golf here with the talent we have out there. So whoever wins on, puts the green jacket on, you never know, somebody might, Patrick Reed surprised us. There's another guy I wouldn't say has a chance to defend his title is Reed. His game is, he's working with Ledbetter now, trying to
straighten
his game out. So.
Oh, boy, working with Ledbetter. That's only worked out for two people, Nick Price, Nick Faldo. That's it. That's the list, and I think that was about 30 or 40 years ago. That's SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio's Bill Rosinski. And when we return to Augusta, we go, and John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, as he takes Dead Aim at the historic inaugural Augusta National Women's Amateur Championship, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos. We're Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. John Patrick is our Augusta Bureau Chief here at Taking Dead Aim as the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, and we got the chance to catch up this week. All right, John, first let's talk about the Augusta National Women's Amateur. And I'm going to start with this question as someone who lived there for 5.5 years, and you've been there a hell of a lot longer than that. On a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being you wouldn't be more surprised if you woke up with your head sewn to the carpet, how surprised are you to see any other tournament but the Masters, much less a women's tournament, taking place at Augusta National?
You know, sure, I'm surprised. I'm not surprised it's women. I'm surprised there is something else going on.
I feel the same way. The women doesn't surprise me as much as anything.
Yeah. I'm also surprised, as we've gotten closer to it, the two rounds of Champions Retreat feel really funny. I don't know why they just can't do... I mean, I guess I know why they can't do two more rounds at Augusta National, because it's Augusta National. But it just seems like the all three rounds ought to be there. And it's an odd configuration. It didn't seem that way. At least it didn't seem that odd when they announced it. But now that we're in it, it's weird.
Does it feel as if Champions Retreat, which is a fine golf course, does it feel as if they have been cheapened by that?
No. Their reputation will probably be enhanced by all of this. One sidebar story was... The day that Fred Ridley announced the Augusta National Women's Amateur and the first two rounds would be a Champions Retreat was when Champions Retreat found out.
Hello, Fred. Could you pick up the phone, please?
Yeah. So I think they'll be enhanced by this. The club has done a lot of work at Champions over the last 9 to 10 months, taking down trees, dealing with the agronomy, making sure it's where they want it to be. So the members at Champions have been enhanced by all of this. I'd be curious to see what happens moving forward.
Who pays the bills at Champions Retreat? Now, when I left Augusta, that course was still in the planning stages, and it was called Big Three. It was going to have 9 holes designed by Player, Nicholas, and Palmer. I don't know whatever happened to that. But you say the club has been doing work out there. Does Augusta National have a piece of Champions Retreat?
No, but there are rumors they want to buy it, and I don't understand those rumors. I don't know why they'd want to operate a private club, another private club that they – that just seems like an odd
– Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Just out there. It was started by a local real estate magnate here in town, and after about 7 or 8 years, it still is, 3 9-hole golf courses, Palmer, Nicholas, and Player designed. They sold it. It's been in the hands of the new owners maybe a couple of years. Membership seems to be strong. It all seems to be going quite well. But the club decided, you know, the Augusta National decided they wanted to enhance the tournament aspect of it. So they went in there for the last year, and took out some trees, put in some trees, spiffed up the agronomy a little bit. Although it's always been a golf course or 3 golf courses, or I don't know what you call 3 9-holes. It's always been in good shape.
Who gets the credit for this at the end of the day, Billy Payne or Ridley?
Oh, I guess Fred will get the credit, but it's Billy Payne's project. I think we've talked about this before. The announcement last year was the last stage in all of the stages of this women's amateur. They don't do anything without years of planning. So this was born under Billy Payne. Fred will get the credit for it, and I'm awfully sure that's how it was positioned last year. This will be a great thing for Fred to announce in his very first year, but this belongs to Billy Payne.
John Patrick's the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show. He's our guest taking Dead Aim. On that note, knowing that the club doesn't do anything without planning years in advance, the one thing that has always rubbed me the wrong way about this is they're doing it on the same weekend as the A&A Inspiration, the first of the LPGA majors, and that doesn't bother me as much as the A&A, all the way back to the Nabisco Dinosaur days, has always had the reputation of giving spots to some of the top amateurs in the country, and this tournament seemed to kind of squash that. With all the years in planning, does it strike you as odd that the club didn't reach out to Mike Wann, who's arguably the most approachable and best commissioner in all of sports?
Did I mention Champions Retreat found out about the It was a huge deal when they announced it. It was the LPGA was not happy. The LPGA was not a happy camper in all of this. It's our understanding, cursory conversations had taken place. Hey, we're thinking about doing this. No real dates, no real details, but this is something that we've got on a burner, and we are seriously considering it. I can't see the dates changing. That's not something they do. They've announced this thing. This is when it's going to be. It's this weekend for many club reasons. So it is what it is. There have been some amateurs that have chosen to play in the ANA. There have been some amateurs that have stated they wanted to be in the inaugural women's amateur. So is like many things in a sports cycle or a news cycle, it is a bit of a news story, but it will come and go, and we'll be on to other things.
You know, you bring up the two rounds of Champions Retreat and then the other round, or the final round at Augusta National, and up until today, as we're recording this, that might have struck me as odd, except that today I heard from Ron Green Jr. that the U.S. Amateur is going to be conducted on two different courses, both number four and number two, this year. And so that's precedent setting as well.
Yeah. I mean, the amateur is a big deal. I mean, I know a lot of clubs who have been approached to host the amateur, and they've said no, just because of the massive scope.
Right. That's what I'm saying, that, you know, there's some precedent for this now.
Yeah. It was odd when they announced it last year. It seems even more odd today that it's just not three rounds at Augusta National. Tomorrow would be the practice round, and we play Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at Augusta National. It's not in their DNA to kind of backtrack and do something different, but it's hard to explain. It just feels weird.
Could you see them changing it up next year or the year after that, where they add the second or third round?
Yeah, again, it's not in their DNA to do that sort of thing. Yeah. It's, you know, because they thought about this. There's a reason they're doing this. Unless those reasons change, and we don't know what those reasons are, but there are reasons they've decided to do it this way. They could have done 4 days of golf at the club, but they chose not to do that. You know, the practice round Friday is closed. It's a club day. The amateurs are out there playing, but there are no spectators. It's a club day. So they don't want to sacrifice those days are precious. You don't want to sacrifice a lot of those, but I don't know. It just feels odd now that we're in it.
John Patrick, syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, our guest taking Dead Aim. You know, famously, when you qualify for the Masters, everybody looks forward to that envelope that comes in the mail at Christmas that says you are indeed invited to participate in the Masters, because that is your ticket to go play as many practice rounds as you want within reason at Augusta National. The people who qualified for the Women's Amateur, have they had that privilege as well?
We have had stories of some of the ladies out here playing golf early on. You know, as you said, you get to play practice rounds within reason, whatever that reason is, you know, whatever that number might be. I assume much of that is the same for the women, but you know, consider the situation. They're amateurs. It costs, no matter where they are, it still costs to come out here. It still costs to play. So we have not heard stories of somebody out here five and six times, but we have heard stories of, there was a young Spanish lady out there that shot 67 or something like that. So we've heard a little of that.
Let's talk a little bit about the course. As I look online at the layout for Augusta National, the numbers are very reminiscent of the way the Masters used to be, and maybe a little shorter in some cases. It appears they're going to be playing from the member tees or at the very front of the member tees on some of these.
Well, could be. I mean, I've always thought it was going to be the member tees. It's a 6,300 yards is a good yardage for these women. So it made perfect sense. I thought that was just kind of a no-brainer. They may move them up. They may move them back a little bit on the tees per se, but the members' tees make a good yardage for these women.
We've just all gotten so used to the massive yardages. I mean, number one for the Masters, I think, plays almost 475, 480 yards. And you look at T. Olive on the card for the women's amateur, and it's a par 4, 365. Downright manageable there, John.
Yeah, except for us. Yes, downright manageable.
Let's talk a little bit of logistics of this women's amateur. And this may be just too inside baseball and geeky for everybody, but I don't care. NBC has the coverage on Saturday. All of the infrastructure for next week's Masters is already built, constructed, and in place, and that's CBS's stuff. Is there a lease arrangement? Have you heard anything? How is all that being? I just can't imagine NBC hauling in equipment for one day and hauling it out as CBS hauls theirs in.
Well, you know, you make a presumption that it's all CBS's stuff. What if it's leased by the club? I mean, I don't know. No, I have not heard anything like that. I don't know how they technically do that. I'm still fascinated that, you know, Jim Nantz and Nick Faldo are on ESPN on Thursday and Friday. So no, those are all of the little fascinating doodads that always spark my interest, always get me curious. But I don't know how they logistically and how they bottom line that and where it shows up on the P&L. Those are CBS cameras, or are they just cameras, or who's this guy sitting in my seat? I don't know.
Have the pictures started rolling in? Have ladies started checking in for the tournament already?
Oh yeah. They had a welcome party last night at the ballpark, SRP Park, where the Green Jackets play. Some of the ladies have been posting their tee gifts. They got a nice letter from the chairman. They got a little plush toy from the club, and they got what appeared to be a bracelet from Tiffany's that from what I saw in one posting, I don't know if she showed a logo on one side of the charm, but on the other it said, you know, inaugural 2019. So they got some nice kit there. They got bag tags. They got beautiful yardage books. Oh, those are nice. So yes, it's kind of been popping up, but they had a little opening ceremony for them last night at the ballpark.
I wonder if these young ladies, and there's this is a dumb question because there's no way they could, but the significance of women playing and conducting a tournament in this age at Augusta National is just, it's amazing to me. And I wonder if they realize how big a moment this is going to be on Saturday.
Well, yeah, I think so. I think they realize it as much as a 17, 18, or 19-year-old can realize anything of that magnitude.
I just imagine what Nancy Lopez would be saying, or what you've talked with Annika Sorenstam recently, what she might be saying. I mean, just this is a big, big, big deal.
Oh, it's a huge deal. But you don't appreciate that until the years have gone by. I think they all appreciate what they're doing. I think they all realize they're going to be part of something special. But how special is with the passage of time? I'll tell you this, as much as I love Jack and Gary and loved Arnold, I really want to be there Saturday morning for Annika and Nancy and Sayre Park and Lorena Ochoa. I can't wait to see that. Because it's never been seen before. I'm really looking forward to that.
The smile on Nancy Lopez's face will light up the Georgia sky.
One of my favorite people.
I can't think of anybody I would rather see take a first shot at that tournament with her ethnicity than Nancy Lopez at Augusta National. That is huge. John Patrick's a syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show. He's our guest taking Dead Aim, talking about the Augusta National Women's Amateur. Get you out of here on this. Let's look ahead. I know that 5 years ago, we had no idea of knowing how big drive, chip, and putt was going to be. And at this point, it is the biggest deal for kids under the age of 15 to get the opportunity to participate in that Sunday before the Masters. Hell, it's become a big deal for a lot of the professional players just to go hang out. 5 years from now, could this do for the women's game what this has done for, you know, something that essentially was you know, punt, pass, and kick for golf?
Sure it can, and it will, and it has every aspect of doing that, because now you've got, well, you know, I'm scared to say ages, but you have 10, 11, 12-year-olds who will kind of grow up and be cognizant of the fact that this is the tournament that happens every year. There are some that won't know it any different 5 years from now. They won't realize, you know, none of us were there for the start of the Masters and how it grew and what it became. We have no way of knowing what this will become, but one can only imagine with the power and the money and the prestige that that club has and what they'll put behind it. And trust me when I tell you, they have put a lot behind this golf tournament. I think it has nowhere to go but to that sort of status. And I just think it will be interesting, to your point, 5, 6, 7 years from now, when there's a 15, 16, or 17-year-old playing in it, who it's natural. It's just, you know, and unlike drive, chip, and putt, you know, if you're good enough and if you maintain your game and if you can make it happen, there's no age limit. You can be older and play in this thing if you can make that happen.
No one is more plugged into all that goes on in Augusta Golf than that guy. Syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, my friend John Patrick. And up next, what's it like to actually play Augusta National? We'll find out from one who recently did that very thing. Country music superstar Chris Lane takes Dead Aim at the most desired 18 holes in golf, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors. Chris Lane is one of our own here in North Carolina. He was a Division I athlete at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. He's become a country music superstar in the last couple of years. However, all that might pale to the opportunity he recently had to play the Augusta National Golf Club. Chris, so I got to begin at the beginning. You were a baseball player at North Carolina, Charlotte. Have you always played golf, or is it something you sort of dabbled in? And then I know as you're on the road as a country singer, everybody plays golf.
So I played football and baseball, and I did not, even though I kind of lived on a golf course growing up, I never really played that much. A, because golf is somewhat expensive, and I had no money.
Yeah, I know.
But now that I'm a singer and I have a little bit more time, some days when you're out on the road, you get a chance to go play. I caught the golf fever, man, and I literally cannot play enough. Like, it's the one thing that I'm passionate about outside of music, and if I could choose anything to do outside of singing, it would be to be a professional golfer.
I don't think people realize how much downtime you guys have when you're out on the road. And golf is a tremendous way to pass 4 to 6 hours of just this endless string of days, is it not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love, even when I'm at home in Nashville on off days, if I have a completely off day,
I spend the majority of my day going to the driving range, and then I'll go play a whole round, and that's just a fun day for me.
So were you out on the road with somebody early on, and they were big golfers, and they kind of initiated you, or how did the bug get to you?
Yeah, well, I had the bug. I kind of just got it just from practicing and playing enough, and then, you know, I'd hit a few good shots here and there, and then the next time I'd do the same thing, and I just kind of felt myself progressively getting better. And I think that kind of helped me, the fact that I started getting better, that kind of helped me get the fever. But then when I was out on tour with Rascal Flatts 2 or 3 years ago, they play a lot of golf. So I was getting to play pretty much every day. And then I really got the fever, man. I started getting progressively better much faster. And then, now I just kind of do it on my own and whatnot, and I've been able to go play in some of these programs. Like, I have the Waste Management coming up.
You're gonna play out in Phoenix.
Yeah, so I played last year, and on 16, the stadium hole.
Oh yeah, it's crazy.
I hit the luckiest shot of my life, man. And the crowd went crazy, so I really got the fever then, and now I get to go back this year and do it again in a couple weeks.
Okay, well, this is an interesting question, because that is an amphitheater setting, and right now that setting on 16 seats, I think between 20 and 25,000 people. So,
it's nuts.
Yeah, so you have felt the rush from the stage. You have also felt the rush on that hole for hitting a good shot, and it's a physical rush. People who have never felt it don't realize that that it actually is a physical energy that hits you in the face, and it's very, very addictive. That's why you guys keep doing what you do.
No doubt.
Which is the bigger rush, the one from the stage, or was the rush greater on that golf shot?
I feel like it's two different energies coming out, and for sure there's something cool obviously about hitting a great golf shot in front of that many people, and it definitely gets you pumped up, but I don't think anything has ever got me as pumped as coming out on the stage for the first time and the crowd going crazy, or even the sound of 15,000 people singing your song to the top of their lungs. I think there were probably be no greater rush for me than that.
Country music superstar Chris Lane is our guest taking Dead Aim. Let's go back to Rascal Flatts for a second. I have a great Rascal Flatts golf story for you.
All right.
Their very first single, Praying for Daylight, is on the charts. I'm living and working in Augusta, Georgia. They're coming in and doing a Memorial Day or Labor Day one-off thing in North Augusta, South Carolina for us. And I'm told by my program director, hey, the guys want to go play golf. Can you take them out? I said, sure. So I'm a member at a club, and I take the guys out to play golf. Well, they get off the bus, and they're wearing cutoff jeans, T-shirts. And I'm going, oh, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to work. We walk into the pro shop. Pro says, hey, man, I love these guys, and I'd love to have them play, but you know we're a private club, and we got a dress code. They can't do that. So Rascal Flatts says, no problem. So they proceed to buy golf wardrobes, all three of them.
Oh, my gosh.
At that moment, right then and there, the pro looks at me and says, man, I'm going to close up early today. This is fantastic. And so these guys, and this is when they were first getting started playing. So they're out there with price tags still hanging off their shirts, whacking it around all over this golf course. And
that is hilarious.
And I thought to myself, if these guys are doing this now, just wait till they really get the bug.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, Joe Don and Jay definitely both have the bug. Gary don't play as much as both of those guys, but they do play a lot of golf, and they go play in all the pro-ams as well, and I've done several of the pro-ams with them, and they're funny guys, but they're actually pretty good at golf.
Now, is it a quid pro quo thing at this point with you? Like, you're going to go play in the pro-am at Phoenix. Are you also doing part of the concert that they do out there?
No, last year, yes. I'd done the concert 2 years in a row, and that's initially how I kind of got hooked up with being able to do the pro-am. But this year I got invited back. I didn't have to do the concert, and I just get to go play. So I'm excited about that. So I'm going to fly out a few days early, play golf on Monday and Tuesday just as practice rounds, and then get ready to go for that Wednesday.
Country music superstar Chris Lane is our guest taking Dead Aim. All right, now the real point of this conversation. Gonna sort of pull back the curtain on Oz in the world of country music and concerts in the southeastern United States. Just about everybody does some sort of charity concert at some point throughout the year. There is a radio station that I used to work for in Augusta, Georgia, that does theirs in November. And if you will ever look at the lineup for this concert, it rivals the lineup of any concert year in, year out on any festival in the world. People scratch their head and go, how are they able to do that? Well, as someone who helped start that concert, it's because I know that that particular station has some access to some people who wear green jackets, and they have the ability to get someone on one of the most hallowed places in our sport, and that is Augusta National Golf Club. And I understand, through a little bird, that one Chris Lane got to test it out this year.
I did, man. What a show to go play, obviously. But, yeah, to be able to go play at Augusta National, that was actually my second time that I played there, which is really cool just to get to do it one time, but to do it two times now and to kind of get to experience that. I even got to take my brother this time. The first time around, I was in the doghouse with him for a couple years because I didn't get to take him the first time I did it. But this time around, I got to take him with me, and that was kind of special as well.
Jake Owen was the same way. He was in the doghouse with his dad, and so the next time that he went and played it, he got to take his dad with him. So describe your experience. Isn't it amazing to actually pull in the main gate at Magnolia Lane and be allowed to drive up there?
Man, it is. I mean, so I have plenty of videos that I'm not allowed to post.
That's right.
but yeah, no, it certainly is special. I mean, I've watched it on TV for all these years, and to know the history behind it and everything that goes into it, yes, it's spectacular. And I mean, everything's immaculate. It's like perfect out there.
It really is.
For people who have never played it before, surprisingly, it's actually not that hard of a course to play. I think the thing that makes it difficult are obviously the greens, but, I mean, for the most part, you can play fairway to fairway. You don't have to hit absolutely the best best tee shot to get to the green and two, you know what I mean?
Even the quote-unquote second cut was something that Jones never intended, and so it is not overly penal at all. The one thing that when I've played it, and I wanted to get your reaction on it, is we're so used to the way it looks on TV during the Masters with the grandstands and the towers and the people, and it's striking to me the first time you see Augusta National – and it's just Augusta National.
Yep, that's very, very true. It's much different without the stadium. The first time I played it was a couple weeks before the Masters, maybe 3 weeks before the Masters.
Oh, so they had everything already set up, yeah.
They had everything out and set up. But this past time, yeah, without any of that stuff, was much different, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Country music superstar Chris Lane is our guest taking Dead Aim, talking about his recent round at Augusta National Golf Club. The other thing that I think would surprise people, or maybe not, is it's almost an exclusively out-of-town membership. So there aren't a great number of people at any given time at the facility or on the golf course. And by a great many people, I'm willing to bet that there may have been your group playing golf and then maybe one other group for the entire day.
Yeah, well, see, a lot of the country artists went and played that day.
Oh, okay, so y'all were out there.
There were a handful of groups the day that I went out there, but I think the first time I was out there, Tom Brady was out there.
Did you get an autograph? Did you say, hi, I'm Chris Lane?
No, I never walked over there and said anything.
So there are people that even someone of your status, you're still kind of in awe of?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. There's so many.
Wow. All right.
Especially when it comes to sports. I mean, being such a big sports fan, I get that way a lot.
And that's so weird because I bet you a vast majority of those guys would be like so thrilled to meet you, and it would make your day.
Yeah, I've tried making friends with a lot of the Panthers players over the last couple of years. Now that I'm starting to get some notoriety, makes it a little bit easier to do that, but yeah, I mean, even just guys that I look up to and guys that I watch on Sundays that I love a lot. I definitely get a little nervous, like I would around 2020 guys that I really love a lot in country music.
So back to Augusta National. I remember you said you've played it twice. I remember the first time I played it, I stupidly started just playing golf. Like I just got into playing the game, and all of a sudden I'm walking across the Sarazen Bridge on 15, and it hit me, oh my God, this thing is almost over. And I didn't, yeah. And I didn't smell the flowers. I didn't take, you know, I didn't do anything. And I was like, have I wasted this opportunity? And luckily, like you, I got a second chance and a couple more chances to actually go play it. But did you have that same experience, or the first time and second time you took advantage of, oh my God, this is where I am. I'm going to take pictures. I'm going to do everything.
Yeah. Well, they make you keep your cell phone in the car. I think the first time around, they actually took, the guy that took us to play, he actually took photos on like a, I don't know, a disposable camera. Which,
wow.
I haven't seen one of those in a long time.
Wow.
But, so yeah, we had to wait to get them developed and stuff like that. And it kind of was a process of getting it on my phone. But I remember posting up a photo, and then I got an immediate phone call saying not allowed to post the photos. So I had to take it down off my social media and stuff like that. But I think in the moment I tried taking it in as much as possible. But at the same time, you know, you're out there and you're like, man, I can't believe I'm actually playing this. And it's easy to just to play your round. And for me, I was making sure that I didn't suck because I wanted to be able to go back and do it again.
So looking back on the experience this second time, this most recent time, what was your favorite hole or holes? What was your favorite experience, the best part of your round? Where did it occur?
Well, I had several birdie attempts that I missed. I don't think I made a whole single birdie that day, but surprisingly, I played not too bad. And I think for me, finding the fairway on 99% of the fairways that day was probably like when I left, I'm like, dang, man, I hit the ball well all day long. I think that for me was fun, but you can't around the, was it Amen Corner? Is that what they call it?
11, 12, and 13. Yes.
Yeah. I really tried to take those in, and I mean, those holes are special. So I really love that par three there. Is it 15?
That's
maybe?
13 12 is 13. The 12 is the famous par three, and then 13 is the par five.
Yeah. 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 So I really love 12 there, the par three. That's such a cool hole.
Get you out of here on this. Country music superstar Chris Lane, our guest taking Dead Aim. You recently played Augusta National. You may not be able to post it on social media, but you can tell me now, what'd you shoot?
That day I shot at 84.
That's a very respectable number for Augusta National.
I put everything out. There was no gimmies, no pickups, no nothing. So I wanted to know exactly what I was going to shoot. Like, I don't care how close it was in the hole. I wanted to make sure I put it out because I just wanted to know, especially going into a lot of these pro-ams. I mean, a lot of times you have to make your putts, and I always practice trying to make them no matter how far out I am. So there was no pickups on that one.
You didn't have to buy your brother a Christmas present, did you? That covered it, right?
That covered it, no doubt about it.
My friend, country music superstar Chris Lane there. I'd also like to thank Taking Dead Aim's Augusta Bureau Chief, John Patrick, the syndicated host of the Augusta Golf Show, and SiriusXM and PGA Tour Radio's Bill Rosinski for their time and insight this week. A reminder, a great way to stay in the loop with us is to be a regular consumer of our Facebook page. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Just search Taking Dead Aim. Also, an announcement concerning our terrestrial radio times. They have changed on Fox Sports Radio in Charlotte, 94.7 FM and 1660 AM. You can now hear the show twice a weekend, Saturday mornings from 7 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to noon. Weatherwise, my gosh, this is 4 weekends in a row with conditions optimal to tee it up and let this game continue to haunt your soul and break your heart. And if you do put a peg in the ground, remember to exhale, swing, pose, and keep in the short grass. I'm Charlie Nance on Twitter, at @CLT_golfguy, and I'll see you right here next week, Taking Dead Aim, presented by the Charlotte office of RBC Wealth Management, located in the beautiful tree line of South Park and Academy Sports and Outdoors.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music.
Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.